AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Quickly, Brett, to the most important topic of the day. Did you see the new Avengers trailer? A new Avengers trailer!
Oh, that came out today? I have not.
Yay! Matt, you want to see right now?
Excuse me as I don't pay attention to your show for the next 5 minutes.
Tell you what, for everyone out there, we're not going to do anything. We'll just shut down the show for a minute and a half. We'll give you a chance to watch it. Actually, we can't do that because we've been told I can't walk away from the microphone anymore. Apparently, leaving the station unattended is illegal.
What's the title of the new movie?
Endgame. Endgame.
That was a rumor for a while. I'm surprised that turned out to be right.
A crying Chris Evans, weeping as they understand what has happened. A great twist at the end of the trailer. Oh, they just take my money. Take my money. Take it. And they're opening it. They're doing the same thing. And now, this year, the number one movie was Black Panther in America. There are a lot of people, myself included, because I watch, there's a great website called Box Office Mojo, which just gives you, it is just a geeky, numbery, wonky box office site where you can understand the daily intake and stuff like this. And you understand movies better, I think, if you understand this. I mean, you know, if you ever ask yourself, why did they ever make a sequel to this movie? Go to Box Office Mojo, look at foreign take. Because I guarantee you, if a movie bombed in the United States, but they've got a sequel coming on out, it made a ton internationally. And that's kind of the way things go. So you get this. The feeling is from you look at the numbers on Box Office Mojo. The reason why Infinity War did not beat Black Panther in the United States, it beat it internationally, but in the United States was because they opened it. They didn't open it on the traditional first week of summer, which is that first weekend of May. They opened it the week earlier. They're doing the same thing again. I don't know if that will cause them to not have, you know, as big a hit as they can. But when you get into the $680 million range, you're making some good coin.
I'm sure Marvel's really hurting for that cash.
That's just, how are they going to make it? And right now, let's be honest, Captain Marvel, I can't wait to see that's coming out in March.
Oh, the 90s nostalgia all in that movie.
Oh, yeah, and Brie Larson just looks fantastic in that role. But you're looking forward to that movie. I'm looking forward to, and of course there's going to have another Avengers movie eventually with another group of, superheroes. Of course I'm going to watch it. They got Doctor Strange coming out. We got another Doctor Strange, another Spider-Man, another Black Panther. I'm going to go watch them all. I mean, we haven't seen a series like this in movies since like the 1930s and those serial shorts they used to do, where my dad used to say, they, as kids, they would always know exactly which one was coming out when. And they'd stay up to date with Buck Rogers.
Is there any superhero Marvel couldn't pull off that's in their inventory that would just, people would say, enough's enough, this is terrible?
I don't think so. And the reason why is, even like Rom's space robot, I think they could pull that one off. They did Ego the Living Planet. How in the world how do you pitch that? Catch this one. This is a living planet. We're going to make this into a superhero. And they put Kurt Russell in it. And it was phenomenal. Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It was a phenomenal film. It was a very enjoyable film. One of the things that when you look at those Marvel movies, I just kept saying to myself, you guys can't be serious. You're going to try to pull this off. I remember when they announced, because they initially did The Incredible Hulk, which was the Ed Norton one, which was actually a pretty good movie. I enjoyed that. But then they did the Iron Man, and that was where everything took off because Robert Downey Jr. was perfectly cast as Tony Stark. Then when they brought in Captain America and Thor, and then all of a sudden they said, we're going to do an Avengers movie. You're like, you're kidding me. You can't pull this off. You're bringing in three completely separate movie franchises into one. Now it's whatever they want to greenlight, whoever the person is there, it's going to happen. Because they make good movies. They're formulaic. They're quite repetitive, let's be honest. But they're enjoyable. They get A-list actors. The reason why DC can't make a decent movie, that's the Justice League guys, yeah. Batman, because none of the main actors in Hollywood want anything to do with them because in case they get that call from Marvel, they want to be ready to go. I mean, and it's not just young actors. It's, actors across the gamut.
But they have Robert Redford in a movie.
Robert Redford's
Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins was Thor's dad. They had Michael Douglas was Ant-Man and the Wasp. Michelle Pfeiffer, who, she looks so beautiful, was the original Wasp. They just had her in that Ant-Man and the Wasp, which, by the way, you will need to kind of see that. That was a movie that came out after Infinity War. You will need to see that before you see Endgame. You will need to see that. Just FYI. That was not the funniest moment of the day by even close standards. By anywhere close, okay? I'm at the Y, okay? And I am as I am there, as I'm running on an elliptical runner, I am catching the news as it happens here, as it goes by. And the headline, I'm not listening to the news. I'm just watching the news. And so on the bottom scroll on CNN, it says, Trump names Barr Attorney General, to which I spit take like you wouldn't believe. And I actually yelled out, what? Because my initial thought was he actually just named Roseanne Barr as the Attorney General. And as much as you want to say, oh, Matt, that's kind of dumb. No, and you don't want to know the truth. Would it really be beyond? Especially when you hear John Kelly and him are not speaking. I could see him. I don't care. I'm making Roseanne the Attorney General. And Kelly's like, I'm out of here. Oh, my God. I can't believe it. I mean, he's making Heather Nauert. Is that how I say your name? N-A-U. She's used to be on Fox News. She's on Fox News. She becomes the press secretary for the State Department. So not exactly steeped in international knowledge. She basically is the Sarah Huckabee Sanders of the State Department. And now he's trying to make her the Secretary of the United Nations, which is a joke. I mean, that is an absolute joke. That is someone who is grossly, Nikki Haley, for the most part, and she was a governor of South Carolina. I actually had some really questions about her qualifications to be the UN Secretary General or the UN Ambassador. But the reality is she was the UN Ambassador. She was far more qualified than Heather Nauert is to be there. I mean, so when I saw this, there was that moment I was sort of like, did he just really do that? Did he just name Roseanne Barr? Because he just could be like, I'm going to get Kid Rock, he's going to be Secretary of Defense. And you know, Vince McMahon is going to be, and his lovely wife are going to be in there. Anyway, so it's been an emotional roller coaster for me today. Let's just put it that way. Infinity trailer, Infinity Wars trailer 2, Endgame, Avengers Endgame. And then, of course, me thinking for about 2 minutes that Roseanne Barr was about to become the Attorney General of the United States of America. Yeah. But I did actually take some time to calm down and refresh myself by going to the post office today to try to mail packages. Pardon me while I smack my head against the wall for about another hour. Actually, I want to take a quick moment here. It is a great time to remind everyone to say thank you to your postman, postwoman, anyone that works in the post office. Thank you. You guys do a great job. And you do. Seriously, think about how many times. I'm 50 years old. I have mailed bills twice a month. I have mailed Christmas cards, birthday cards. I used to mail more, but I don't mail as much, but I still do it today. I can honestly say probably only one or two things ever never made it to the other destination. Ever. And I can't even say if that probably wasn't the post office. It was probably, you know, either my mistake, I didn't put a stamp on it correctly or put the address down wrong, or the place where I sent it to got it wrong. The Postal Service is a prime example of what the U.S. government can do right. And they say, well, they don't make any money. Hey, they actually do make pretty good money, but when the Republicans put that ungodly standard on them where they had to fund 75 years of pensions, you know, and they were losing money. And by the way, warning alert, mark my words, when the post office makes that 75-year pension ball, the Republicans are going to steal it from the post office and give it to the wealthy. That is all they're going to do. That is all they're going to do. They're going to say, gee willikers, we made you make this up because we wanted you guys to be, you know, cover your expenses. But, you know, gee willikers, you know, that's a lot of money we could give to 3 or 4 millionaires, and they can give us tax donations or campaign donations. So I just, the post office gets a heck of a lot of grief, primarily from the Republicans. The reality is it is an exceptionally running government service. And no, there is no way on the planet that anything like we get, Daily Mail service, would ever exist in a only in the private sector. Sure, for wealthy neighborhoods, but every letter would cost you $7-$8 to mail. You know, if you wanted to send photos to everyone, I mean, and you say to yourself, well, you just do everything online. Yeah, well, that's the quickest way to ensure that it goes online. And then if power goes out, you don't get anything for, you know, if it's godforsaken, godforsaken long time, you could end up having, you know, no mail for a few weeks. The Postal Service gets a lot of grief. They do a great job. And at this time of year, they are working their cabooses off. So if you see your Postal Service worker today, go say thank you to them. They do an absolutely fine job. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Tell you what, let's take a break right now. We'll come on back. We got a lot of little things to get to today. But if you do want to talk about the Avengers trailer, we can talk about that all day long. Oh, boy. That is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 94, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
Share a special experience with your loved ones this holiday season at Nightingale, an intimate eatery and cocktail lounge. Receive a $20 gift certificate for every $100 gift certificate purchased through the end of December. Enjoy their mulled wine, perfect for special occasions and holiday gatherings. A fun, cozy atmosphere and delicious, inventive dishes make for a memorable and warm get-together. Nightingale is located at 26th and Lindale in Minneapolis. More at nightingalempls.com.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman for Continental Diamond. You've heard me talk about this place for a long time, and this holiday season, it's time to get your loved one a gift that will last a lifetime. Their experts know all the latest trends and will help you find the perfect gift to fit any budget with an amazing in-stock selection to choose from. Stay away from the craziness of the malls and visit Continental Diamond, adjacent to the West End in St. Louis Park, and at ContinentalDiamond.com. That's Continental Diamond for the perfect holiday gift.
Let me know when you're done watching that, then.
I'll get into that in a second. I haven't watched it yet.
Always the consummate pros here, aren't they? If we put on, like, yesterday's show, you think we could go catch that movie or something? Yeah. You know, I don't think anyone would notice. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Hi, good to be with you. By the way, I do want to clarify. William Barr is the Trump nominee to be the Attorney General, not Roseanne Barr.
Imagine if someone just tuned in for, like, a minute on your show and thought, Roseanne is the Attorney.
What? Seriously, though, I can't be the only one who walked past a TV screen with it being muted and seeing Trump nominates Barr for Attorney General and said, oh my God. You know, it'd be like saying, you know, it'd be like, there are a few other names you probably could do like that. Rock. I don't know. Is there a guy that's a respectable person named blank Rock? The Rock. So if I walked past a TV and said, Trump nominates Rock to lead Commerce Department, either it's Kid Rock or it's The Rock Dwayne Johnson. Neither one of them would seem to be qualified, in my mind, to run the Commerce Department. I don't think that that'd be the case.
Chris Rock.
Chris, yeah, well, Chris Rock, and he'd make for very entertaining press conferences, but I would be, with all due respect to Chris Rock, I don't think he is qualified. And Dwayne Johnson actually is a very talented man. He is a guy. He's got an insane amount of charisma, talent, and ability. He can't run the Commerce Department.
He might run for president in 2020. That was always a rumor.
Oh, gosh. I'm honest. Is it really that hard for you to look at me and say, oh, there's no way in the world Trump would ever nominate Roseanne Barr to be the attorney general? Are you kidding me? The man doesn't even know how to put his hand on his heart when it comes down to it. I mean, we praised the man because he sat still and didn't annoy anyone behind him during George H.W. Bush's funeral. And we've already said the same thing, is that that was the same standard we had for my four-year-old. This is not a competent man. It's not a competent man. Capping a nearly year-long debate on however Minneapolis should grow, the city council voted 12-1 Friday to approve the 2040 Comprehensive Plan, a far-reaching document that will shape the city's development for years to come. The plan was gained national attention for its upzoning of an entire city. The 2040 plan would allow the construction of buildings for as dense as triplexes in neighborhoods once reserved for single-family homes. The nearly unanimous vote was a victory for City Council President Lisa Bender, whose advocacy for the plan overcame substantial opposition primarily from residents of single-family zone neighborhoods. Bender said the plan set a bold vision for our city. She said, it's merely one step to correct past discriminatory housing policies and help the city fight climate change. In many ways, we're just getting started, she said. Also Friday, the council passed an inclusionary zoning ordinance introduced by Bender, which she has characterized as an essential companion to the comprehensive plan. The change will require developers to include certain number of affordable units when building new apartments. Well, I can say this. I live in the city of Hopkins, and Hopkins, I just wrote about it. If you didn't see it in MinPost, they published an article for me earlier this week where I basically railed the rally to Hopkins' defense. Hopkins has been revitalizing itself since really the 1990s, and they've done a magnificent job. And at the same time, they have maintained affordable housing standards. So this growth, this change in Hopkins has happened while maintaining affordable housing. That's a real great accomplishment. And if the city of Minneapolis is trying to do that, I agree. Although I will say, I understand, I think, the single-family house issue. I mean, if you're a single-family homeowner on a piece of property, especially anywhere in the Lakes area on the southwest side of town, the idea... Now, I would have a hard time believing that someone would spend some of the money required to buy, you know, tear down a house and build a triplex down there in those areas. Because, I mean, but at the same time, gosh, look what's happening. I never thought they would be doing that to 50th and France over in Edina, where they had these old great colonial houses, and they've been, this is an eyesore, rip it down. Well, it's still, you know, 3,000 square foot. Oh, it's a small, tiny house. We need to build to the property lines. I mean, I think that the single family homeowners might actually have a little bit of concern. And you might, if the end game is going to be the taxable property overall increases, but as opposed to having, say, a $1 million house, you're going to have a $400,000 triplex. And I don't know, you know, well, I mean, that could, yeah, that's one scenario. I just don't know if necessarily it's going to be great. Will it make a lot more housing? Potentially, yeah. If people are willing to, you know, tear down one house and build a triplex up in the place. I mean, I guess maybe it's actually a way that the city is sort of throwing their hands in the air and acknowledging that, you know, people just don't build single family starter homes anymore. That the idea of a 2,000 square foot or less single family house just is not going to get built. So Minneapolis City Council votes to approve the 2024 Comprehensive Plan. Council Councilmember Linnea Palmisano, who represents the southwestern corner of the city, was the only no vote in the 2040 plan. She read a stern statement in which she expressed frustration with the public process that has lacked transparency and accountability from the beginning. I think we've done a disservice. So, yeah, you've got the right goals, but we've got the wrong comp plan. Councilmember Lisa Goodman, who had up to Friday's meeting remained silent on how she would vote, said the plan was more positive than negatives, but was concerned the city doesn't do enough to alleviate fears people who were worried about how it would impact their neighborhoods. This is a process. And you want to know the truth is, I think that I don't think the people in the wealthier parts of Minneapolis are out of bounds for being concerned about this, because the mentality that I have seen portrayed in this entire argument, and by the way, that if you want to read an interesting article, read the court order that stopped this for about 12 hours, this vote, read that story on the Star Tribune. There's some interesting heated passion there. But the reality is that there are some people who are looking at those houses as we're not saying we specifically want to go into that house and go get that, but you're putting forward a policy which basically is saying that. And I understand you're not targeting anyone individually, but you kind of are trying to shake the system. And whereas you might have some real developmental potential in areas where you're starting to see a resurgence, the community's coming back, I think that's great. The reality is you also have the potential of this kind of getting rid of the vast majority of your wealthier residents, and in return, in your best case scenario, kind of getting a much more of a middle class. Now, once again, middle class housing is not a bad thing, but when your tax base starts taking big steps backwards, that's it. That ends up affecting everyone in the long run. So that's the concern. This is a process that brought us together, but not divided us. That was up to Lisa Goodman. We should have done more to order to quell fear. Still, Goodman joined the majority to approve the plan. The 2040 Comprehensive Plan has been years in the making. It was the first shared with the public in March, a requirement of the Metropolitan Council. City officials worked to see how it could help support a growing population while lowering the cost of new housing. It quickly captured the city's attention. Residents submitted thousands of comments. The council heard hours of public testimony, and spirited campaigns were launched both for and against the plan, with defenders of single-family neighborhoods dominating the response. The plan changed over time. Instead of fourplexes or single-family lots on single-family lots, planners brought it down to triplexes. Dozens of amendments were added by city council members. And by the way, I want to bring up a point here. I know a lot of neighborhoods in Minneapolis where there's no parking and it's all single family homes. You're going to bring in, 200% more people. Where are these people going to park? I mean, that is another major problem you're going to have there. And I don't think that this plan really addressed that. I mean, to a point it did with some of the issues, but I think you're about to see. You thought parking was bad on Minneapolis-St. Paul streets before, and maybe this is the whole point. Maybe this is just basically about getting revenue when we have snow days. I don't know, because you're going to get a lot of vehicles towed because there's not going to be any place to park. I mean, you're going to have to park your car miles away from your house probably on some of the snow days. I mean, it's going to get bad. The city of Hopkins has a very interesting rule, which says any lot that's in the metro, in the city, if it's zoned for single family housing, the size of the house can only be a certain percentage of the lot size. That is the reason why in Hopkins you haven't had McMansion Central, is the McMansions can't be built there. And so it's not something that's going to happen in Hopkins. And by that, I mark my word, in 30 years, Hopkins is going to be a real rarity. Same with Richfield. Same with, to a point, New Hope and Robbinsdale. You're going to have single-family housing communities, and they're going to be in high demand. Because the reality is people have the choice of a single-family house or living in a triplex. well, I'll move out of this Minneapolis area and I'll just go find a single family home. And those single family homes are going to become much more expensive. So by having these rules in place that preserve the single family housing, you've actually, in the long run, are going to make Hopkins more desirable. I think that it's a dangerous path to go down to just start, you know, saying, and especially when you're looking at neighborhoods, you know, you're going to start seeing a lot of neighborhoods with three or four houses on it, which probably are not going to look like that, you know, they're kind of slapped together triplexes. And I don't know if you're going to, it's necessarily going to add any value outside of, yeah, it'll be some lower, probably lower income housing, some more options there, but I don't know. I think the idea is right. I'm to a point, I am somewhat surprised that there weren't some preservation rules put into place for single family housing, at least some of the neighborhoods there, because this could potentially lead to a free for all. And as much as I like to say, well, as a triplex, they're going to be looking in more kind of middle class, maybe lower class neighborhoods. Not necessarily. If I live on Lake Minnetonka and I say to myself, I can build one house, I can buy this one house and build three high end triplexes in that one house. Well, so long as a single family home, I'll just, you know, I'll get to, you know, three young executives and I'll put them in there. So I don't know. Minneapolis, I think this is going to be revisited. I'm almost positive of it. Jeff is in Minneapolis. Let's talk to him really quick about it. Welcome on in, Jeff.
Yeah. Hi, Matt. I echo your words. I think we're going down a slippery slope as a resident of Minneapolis. My neighborhood is predominantly single family homes, and I've been here for almost 30 years now, and what I've seen is a regeneration of the neighborhoods with young couples moving in with kids, and actually our neighborhood schools are flourishing and growing. I think that this is just going to allow investors to snatch up houses, and as you said, you could see blocks with just a few homes on it. It's going to destroy, I think, what our founders of Minneapolis in the concept of neighborhoods wanted, and that was single family homes.
Well, Jeff, let's talk about this really quick for a little bit here, because sure. I think you and I both agree the concept of what they're putting forward is actually a pretty good idea. It is a good idea. The problem is if you make it a free for all. The question is, what is going to stop all of a sudden a developer from starting to buy up all the, you know, million-dollar single-family lots and then building a triplex in those neighborhoods, dramatically decreasing the overall tax base of the city and in turn creating more traffic, more parking problems? Because those houses, no one's going to go around Lake Harriet and tear down a house and build a triplex that's going to be affordable. That's just not going to happen. And so are you cutting off your nose to spite your face?
I echo your words. And, by 2040, I'll probably be long gone out of the Twin Cities, somewhere warm. But my concern is for the younger generation. And I think, you know, let's keep our powder dry. I think that this will get refined, as new elected officials come in. I actually commented to Mayor Fry, and I said, I hope I don't have any voter regret for voting for you, but I think you're going down the wrong path on this. What I would like to see is, yeah, Minneapolis is tapped out right now, I think, on livable space. I mean, that we're building along the Hiawatha Corridor a lot of apartment buildings and whatnot, and some of that is for low-income housing. But what I'd like to see is the metropolitan area open up, and I'm talking Edina and, Minnetonka, these more wealthier communities open up homes for more affordable housing. They put a wall up. It's kind of not in my backyard.
Oh, no, they're definitely not going to. Oh, for goodness.
I know that in a perfect world, and yeah. But, you know, we're here now. We're at the edge of the abyss, and there's going to be a serious housing crisis here in the Twin Cities, unlike San Francisco. We need to figure it out. And I don't have the answer, Matt.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the phone call. No, I mean, Edina, I think, would put up signs saying, you're not welcome here if you don't live here. If they could get away with it. Get out, you heathens. How dare you?
Remember, they're intruders.
They're intruders. Intruder. Intruder. He's, look at that. It's a McNeil. Get him. Get him. Get him out. Shoo, 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 shoo. Yeah, they're going to get real open up. But I mean, actually, what you see is Dyna gives you actually the template of what kind of development you're going to spur with this. And like I said, this is not against the idea. I think the idea is good. The question is, should you have built in protections for neighborhoods where the income or the housing prices, the property value is dramatically higher? Because not once again, this is not, I'm not vouching for any NIMBY, not in my backyard stuff. It's more of a, won't you, I mean, the potential for you to really take away your tax revenue is there. And, you know, you're just, I don't know if that's actually a good idea. And, but going back to his one other quick point here, and I'm going to take a break here because I'm running really late. Julie, hold on. I'll get your call in a second. But the founding fathers of Minneapolis and for St. Paul, they never anticipated when they started building this town, they never even comprehended that there would be houses south of 30th Street. The city's built, it's grown, it's been a success, and that is a sign of the success. But this, the existence of the city as a normal, as a primarily a single family residence community, I just don't know. I agree with the point. I think that it's kind of getting past that. But at the same time, like I said, I think there are some things you probably wanted to do to preserve your tax base that I think in the long run are going to decimate your tax base. And, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how this little development plays out. I will agree, though, with Jeff, that I think that this is going to get revised over time. Hold on, Julie, your call in just a moment. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Expedition Journal, entry number 7. It's been a week since I entered this vast land called Big Buy Electronics in search of a digital camera. Today, I encountered several people calling themselves employees, but they only spoke of car stereos, knowing nothing of cameras. So I continued westward through endless forests of CDs and DVDs. By evening, I took refuge near some televisions to regain my bearings. I begin to wonder if this camera department is a myth. I should have heeded my colleagues and gone to National Camera. Their knowledge and customer service is the stuff of legend. But it is too late for me now. Tell my wife I love her.
At National Camera Exchange, our price guarantee means we'll match any local store or internet price any day of the week. And now during our holiday sale, the prices get even better. You'll even get free classes with any camera purchase. See store for details.
Odie, what are you going to get Linda this year?
Well, Sven, how about a t-shirt from Northern Sun?
Oh, yeah. They have those funny ones and political ones, too.
Yeah, and don't you know how Linda feels about that president?
Yeah, I don't care for him so much either.
Sven and Oli get their shirts, stickers, and magnets from Northern Sun. You should, too, don't you know?
Visit Northern Sun in Minneapolis on East Lake Street or online at northernsun.com.
It's the best time of the year. Toyota-thon is on. Rudy Luther Toyota has the 2019 models in stock, and to make room, the 2018s have to go. There are huge incentives from Toyota, and on top of that, Rudy Luther has additional huge discounts. And remember, you get my favorite perk from Rudy Luther, the Luther Advantage Card, which gets you 10 cents off per gallon of gas at Holiday Station stores for 3 years with every vehicle purchase. Rudy Luther Toyota-thon is on. Stop in today at the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Considering replacing your vacuum? What do you do with the old one? Throw it in the garage? Worse yet, throw it in the garbage? How about trade it in and save? A1 Vacuum in Roseville has been around forever, and they take trade-ins. When you trade in your old vacuum, you save. So if it's time to replace that old clunker headed for the garage or landfill, bring it in to A1 Vacuum in Roseville. You can find A1 Vacuum at a-1vacuum.com or call 651-222-6316.
Lori is watching us on the Facebook feed. Hi, Lori. I love your snooty country club man voice.
How dare you? That is not snooty. That is refined. How, this heathen who is, how dare you question me? Thurston Howell III, how dare you imply I would be on an island with those people? And by the way, the intruder story, that was the bike lane. They didn't want the bike, was it the 9 Mile Creek bike lane? We don't want you intruders there on your bicycles coming into our community, sweating in our disruption. How dare you? Yeah, they're going to be real open up soon. Yeah, there's going to be a gate and a moat around that town. Thanks for listening, by the way, Lori. Good to have you with us today. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Programming is brought to you by eatlocalminnesota.com. It's Greek to me. That's right. Fantastic food. I am so glad this restaurant's now part of Eat Local. I love this place. Highly recommend it. We're going to go over on Sunday. Go over. Get some great food. And if you haven't tried Greek food, trust me, it is delicious. They got vegetarian options. Great options. It's great. Lamb, too. Just phenomenal. And if you have, when was the last time you went? Go over. Try it out. It's Greek to me. It is Lynn Lake area, the 626 West Lake Street. It is the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. No, Julie, she took off?
No, yeah, she's not there.
No, she's not there. Sorry, Julie. Sorry it took a while to get to you. I'm just babbling on about crud here. I wanted to get your call in the air. No, I think one thing I want to make sure I put very clear, the heart of the city council is in the right place. And trust me, I think there's a heck of a lot more neighborhoods in Minneapolis that would be revitalized with triplexes coming in versus that. One of the things you have to look at when you're looking at a full scale plan is the tax base. And you're not going, pound for pound, you get those high-end homes on the lake, in the chain of lakes areas, you got to kind of do your part to make sure that those stay there. That's where your bread and butter money is on your tax base. That and the big buildings downtown. Julie is in Minneapolis. Hi, Julie. I'm sorry for taking for so long to get to you. Welcome back.
No, I got a squirrely phone, too. I don't live in a high-end area. I live a little bit east of Lake Nokomis, and I agree with the two comments. The thing that bothers me that the city council said was, when they build these triplexes, we hope that they will be helpful for lower-income people. We hope. Hey, since when developers build something and, they're not going to have them be what I would call affordable, and the average person would. I would say about the prior gentleman that called, they bragged, they may have bragged that the many apartment buildings that they're building on Hiawatha Corridor are affordable. They're not. I just read in the Longfellow Messenger, average one bedroom is going to be about $1,400 to $1,500 a month. Terribly affordable
Julie,
one bedroom.
And Julie, isn't it for the size of the building, a certain percentage of the units have to be affordable?
I don't know. It depends on the building, but they're building a whole slew. The cheapest one in this particular building is if you can live within 500 square feet, and some people can. That's fairly small. They're bragging that, it's only $1,000 a month for a studio that's 500 square feet.
Wow.
But, I've been pricing things on a lot of the new apartments in Minneapolis. There's even one on Lake Street that's $1,600 a month for one bedroom. They're very similar to the cost of the one bedrooms in Edina. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, I was renting in Edina, and you could just about be sure that it would be about $200 a month cheaper to live in Minneapolis.
Well, and Julie,
but this whole thing is crazy.
And Julie, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling back. Now, when I lived in Minneapolis and I was going to college, I lived in a studio apartment. Well, my first apartment was a studio apartment. That was $550, and that was actually in a nicer apartment building. That was $550 with a nicer apartment building. The concern I would have actually does go into lower income housing, because if you end up with a glut of housing, you are generally not going to, and there's more places to rent than are people looking to rent. Well, then you're going to have to start seeing price wars to try to get the lower price. And I think it's a complex issue, but I will agree. I will wholeheartedly agree with Julie on one thing. I think there's a lot of places that talk about affordable housing
that they're not really talking about affordable housing. They're talking about affordable housing when it's like when my kid wanted to sign up to play baseball, and the guy looks at me and goes, "It's $1,300 for 2 months," and you're like looking at him like, "What? Yeah, $1,300? That's a ton of money." But from their perspective, they're looking at players playing in these premier private club leagues who are paying $6,000-$7,000 every 3 months to play in it. So they look at this as like, it's a bargain. Well, by the way, there's a reason why not very many low-income kids are playing sports nowadays. And it's stuff like that. I think that if your perspective is skewed, then you all of a sudden start, missing what is affordable housing. A different Julie. This is a different Julie in Minneapolis. Wanted to chime in. Welcome in, Julie.
Hi, Matt. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. So here's the deal. The formulas for qualifying for subsidized housing in Minneapolis, and all I know about is Minneapolis because I live here, the formulas are completely out of whack. They don't, there's no equivalent for income to rent ratios. And so you end up with all these really nice places like in Uptown that are supposed to be subsidized rental places. And like several callers have said before, they're not affordable because they're too expensive relative to what people earn. And so those formulas really need to be looked at and reset because nothing low rent. Low rent. Let's just say low rent. Low rent is affordable to people who need low rent housing.
Are they doing it when they're looking at that Uptown apartment, for an example? Is it a percentage? Well, this one doesn't cost nearly as much as our penthouse one, so our penthouse one is $5,000 a month. This one is only $1,500. See, it's a great value. Is that what they're kind of doing?
Well, they might, but I'm just going to use myself because I don't have a lot of data. In my case, an apartment, like the former Julie said, it would be $1,500 or $1,600. And the income to qualify for that rent-subsidized apartment would be around $31,000 a year. So, and that's gross. So that's not affordable for a person earning $31,000 a year.
I would agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I agree with that wholeheartedly. I'm just doing the math here myself.
Yes. So the other side of it is when I just forgot his name. Who was running for Senate against Tina Smith?
Housley.
Richard Painter.
Oh, that Richard.
Richard Painter has this idea about affordability for housing for low-income earners that I just think is brilliant. He says, give the check to the low-wage earner so that the earner can go find housing. What we're doing under these city and state and federal programs is subsidizing developers to make money off of poor wage earners.
And then they get in there and they get in there and they make the argument that the and thanks, Julie, I appreciate the phone call. They get in there and make the argument that the basically we're making it affordable when they're not necessarily making it affordable. She is right, though. I'm going to just do the numbers here. $1,500 a month is $18,000 a year. So that's after taxes. That's not affordable. I mean, that's the only rent. That's not including car. That's not including food. That's not including heat necessarily, depending on the situation. But that's $18,000. You need to be making $35,000, $40,000 a year to afford a $1,500 a month rent. And that's not affordable. And so, I don't know necessarily if we need to go down the Richard Painter thing, but that's exactly what the system is we pay developers to, pinky swear they're going to put affordable housing in there, but at the end of the day, they're in it for the money.
So there should be a rent cap. Well, that's not the, that's a caller calling in saying we should have a rent cap. It's not the worst idea. I don't know. Are we getting to that point? I mean, that's something you see in larger metro areas. And let's face it, Minneapolis-St. Paul is not a small town anymore. Like I said, I agree with Jeff, the first caller. This is going to get revisited. I guarantee you it is going to be, especially if all of a sudden, and mark my words, especially if you start seeing the higher income neighborhoods really start getting changed dramatically, I think the city is going to scramble back and try to make some exceptions for certain neighborhoods on this bill. At the end of the day, I think it's a good idea to get people try to get them affordable housing, but you know, you need to have the checks and balances in place to make sure the housing is affordable. Okay. 952-946-6205. I'm going to take an outstate paper to task really quick in just a moment. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Are you in charge of the company gifts? Looking for a great work party gift or maybe just something nice for yourself? Hi, this is Richard Piepenberg with Vinaigrette, and we're ready for you. We package, gift wrap, and even deliver the finest oils and vinegars so you can simply enjoy the holidays. Since 2009, our family-owned and operated store has specialized in everything vinaigrette. Come into Tap, Taste, and Treasure, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis, and in downtown Excelsior at 287 Water Street. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
Hi, this is Laura, and I want to tell you about my family's favorite thing. It's our wood stove. We bought it about 14 years ago from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. And see, the wood stove has actually paid for itself because we can keep the main area that we live in toasty warm with this great moist heat. But more important than saving money, it has actually improved our lives. Having a fire simplifies life. It provides comfort. It sort of takes the chill out of winter.
I'm Peter Solak. In 1977, I started Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, and I experienced the simple joy of warming myself by a fire. I also realized that the place and the way we embrace fire has evolved in a diversity of forms and styles. So at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we have brought together the widest selection of our fireplace products and technical knowledge in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to use our knowledge to help you choose the design and function that is right for you and your home.
Visit Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces today and find the right fire for you. Hi, this is Laura Hedlund. Check out Food Freedom Radio anytime on podcast. We've had some fun shows this fall. We had Brian DeVore with Wildly Successful Farming. We had the president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. We played clips from the Governor's Forum, so we had the whole show with Tim Walz. And then we'll be talking with IATP on the update NAFTA plan. So tune to Food Freedom Radio live Saturdays at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast at am950radio.com.
Standard Heating knows the holidays are a time for lists. Shopping lists, guest lists, good and naughty lists. But don't forget about the most important list of all, Standard's 24-point checklist that comes with our professional furnace tune-up. During December, you can get this crucial tune-up for $25 off. Learn how you can save $25 on our furnace tune-up and all our other year-end deals today at standardheatingdeals.com/radio. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Big, you know, big city problems. That's what it is. I mean, affordable housing is always going to be a big issue out there. Todd Colin, thank you, Todd, very much for sponsoring AM 950. We sure do appreciate it. We really do. Todd, of course, is a great listener who lived here in Minneapolis, St. Paul for many years, moved to Spain. And yeah, I curse him every day. You're out there enjoying the food and the culture and not having Trump as your president. Anyway, he's out there. He loves the station, but he can't really go down and shop at our regular stores because he's in Spain. Well, what does he do? He sponsors the station. You can too. 952-946-8885. 952-946-8885. Of course, he's got this band, Just Folk. They got the fourth album coming on out. Don't Turn Off the Lights is out. By the way, the link on CD Baby is working again, so keep an eye out for that. I'll link to all that stuff a little bit later on, and thanks, Todd. Once again, we do appreciate it. 952-946-6205. Bluestem Prairie story here. We talked about there. They were the one that put out there that Greg Davids, the representative who basically backed up Kurt Dout's mute button, was, you know, talking about how, you know, the
he basically was starting to complain on whether or not, you know, politicians are going to be heard, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, your hypocrisy is there, and it was, we ridiculed him mercilessly for that. But I wanted to give a point out here. This is from the Marshall Independent, Marshall Independent. And it's an editorial where they rip on the mute button. Mute buttons are handy when watching TV and other annoying commercial comes on, usually at twice the volume of the regular program. They provide invaluable during the past. They proved invaluable during the past political campaign season to silence the onslaught of negative ads. But as much as a mute button has a place in the family TV room, they don't belong in the legislature. The past couple of legislative sessions, the Republican House Speaker has had the ability to turn off the microphones on the floor with the push of a button. It was used to shut off an acrimonious debate, especially in the closing hours of the session. It's great. Marshall Independent, I am glad that you are taking this stand and saying mute buttons in the House are pointless as it's being ripped out by the incoming Democratic leadership. But true courage would have been the minute that button was put in, you guys saying something. And I went on the Marshall Independent website and I typed in mute button. Funny, they didn't have any stories about it. There was no editorials, nothing. So that when the Republicans had it in Marshall, there was no one in there saying, gosh, isn't this a horrible idea to have the Speaker of the House be able to shut off people's mics? But now, after the mute button's getting ripped out, now all of a sudden, they have found their spine. They have found their courage. Come on. I understand you guys out in the rural parts of the state run Republican. But, you know, don't say anything. Don't act as all of a sudden you're making a grand stand when for 2 years this mute button's been being used and you said nothing. And only when Melissa Hortman gets ready to rip the thing out are you actually saying something. So I'm not going to give you credit on that. You know, when you have the guts to criticize it from the get-go, then I'll give you credit. Finally, an obituary for us today. This out of Forest Lake. Faith Lutheran Scandinavian Dinner, also known as the Lutefisk Dinner, or Holy Tuesday, has peacefully died at the age of 70. It was preceded by death by numerous cousins. Many other churches have had to make the decision over the years. It's survived by a few remaining siblings that are going on strong in our neck of the woods, Elam Lutheran in Scandia and Christ Lutheran on Marine and St. Croix. The Scandinavian dinner will be remembered for all the familiar faces and reunited each year over the wonderful meal of lutefisk. Okay, can you actually put wonderful meal and lutefisk? Well, I guess you can. Wonderful meal, lutefisk, meatballs, potatoes, lefse of bread, cranberries and coleslaw, and butter or cream for the lutefisk. Lots of butter. The meal had a sense of humor, including jokes like the piece of cod, which was far surpasses all our human understanding. The meal was hosted by a group known as the Men of Faith, but it was only able to function thanks to the work around 150, volunteers that make it happen every year. What they're basically saying is this: the demand for lutefisk is not nearly as much as it used to be. Could be because we have no other options on the table. I mean, Brett, have you had lutefisk before?
I don't think I have, actually. Am I missing anything?
No, you're not. It's not like the Catholic fish dinners that come up in Lent, which, magnificent. This is more of a, you know, before you start thinking you've got it good, yeah, let's make sure you put your expectations in check. It is still sad to see, because that is as Minnesota as it gets. All our best. You will be missed. Faith Lutheran Scandinavian Dinner. The Lutefisk Dinner. Pageants in studio. We're back on Monday. Have a great weekend. Till then, see ya.